Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the fourth day of the fourth month on Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
You can tell Dave Enright is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, heading for hole in the wall to hold off the posse. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before we start, once again, I would very much like to thank all those of you who supported us so generously during the pledge drive. You may have noticed we did not, in fact, meet the pledge. So there will clearly have to be changes. But for now, everything stays the same. And we only missed it by about $2,400, but we missed it. So changes will happen. Get ready. But for the rest of you, thank you so much for everything you did. And we fully, fully appreciate it. Now on to the news. IRS Commissioner John Koskinen says phone scammers are swarming the country in the run-up to April 15th, a.k.a. Tax Day. These criminals call taxpayers and insist they must immediately give up their personal information or make a payment, Koskinen warned. Don't fall for it. If you are surprised to be hearing from us, you are not hearing from us, Koskinen said. Our way of contacting you is by letter. The last thing you ever hear from an IRS agent of any kind is threats that we are about to throw you in jail unless you pay us immediately or put money into a particular account, he said. The number of reported calls is going up, Koskinen said, but because good people are spreading the word to their friends and relatives about these con artists, the number of people who fall and prey to this scam is down significantly. And another thing, don't fall for a trick where you get an email and it looks like an IRS website, he said. If you know how to check the details of the email, you will see that it's not from the IRS. Remember that these con artists may know the last four digits of your Social Security number because that stuff's out there and try to use that to trick you. Here's the bottom line. The IRS will never, ever call you or send you an email. To date, they may contact strictly via snail mail. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, have you gotten the IRS call? Your choices are, yep, and I fell for it. Yep, and I didn't fall for it. Not yet, but I'm primed now. And not sure, what's the IRS? So far, we have 24 votes, and of course, no, that's nice. Not yet, but I'm primed for it now, is number one, followed, of course, by you Weisenheimers, not sure what's the IRS, followed by one person who said yes and didn't fall for it, and luckily nobody said yes, they fell for it. But I know you'll have more to say about that. So when you're done taking the poll, scroll down on the right-hand side under Fascinating Stuff. The first choice is the forums, and when you go into the forums, the second forum down is the poll discussion. And the very first item there is for April 15th. Have you gotten the IRS call? So far, only two posts. So if you want to join in that conversation, you can. And you can, of course, join us by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, the government's not normally one to call you. They're, yeah.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
It's similar to the fake FBI and Homeland Security messages you get, that unless you pay the ransom, we're going to come and arrest you. The police generally don't notify you they're going to come and arrest you.
Yeah, the whole point of that is to make it a surprise. Yeah.
Attention, perpetrator. We're flashing this notice on your computer screen that We're going to come arrest you. Now, we're going to give you all the time in the world to get away.
To get away, exactly.
One of the interesting things about these phone call scams is that it costs the bad guys money to have a phone line.
Right.
And with the email scams, it's virtually free to send out a million email addresses. You sign up for a fake mail service or hijack someone else's mail service.
Right.
So I've got to be wondering if they're hijacking phone lines too. Or do they follow the business tenet that it takes money to make money?
Yeah.
So we'll open a boiler room, we'll open phone lines, we'll pay for all this offices, and then we'll scam people out of their money.
Well, I've been following this and listening to reports and reading reports, and every one of them essentially says the same thing. We get this phone call. It's either from the Washington, D.C. area or from the New York area. And when the people answer, it sounds like they're in a literal boiler room with all the noise behind them. And they're all speaking with very thick accents.
I wonder, because we've wondered about this too with the fake antivirus calls where your computer's infected and you better buy our antivirus service. Are they, well, legitimate boiler rooms, I guess how legitimate are they, where they just, that's the client now. You know, so the bad guy, the bad guy hires the boiler room.
Exactly.
To do it all, and so he doesn't have to do it all himself, and there's probably anonymity involved there.
Anonymity?
Yeah, so as with the fake tech support calls, they know what they're talking about, and they know how to push the trigger words, and they know how to get you scared that you are infected. So they probably are real tech support guys at some point.
At some point they were, that's right, and they've got good scripts, which is 90% of tech support's they've got good scripts. But you know what's really, I think what's really happening, and don't forget, you can join in the conversation, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. One of the things that seems to be happening is the gullibility quotient of the average American citizen seems to be going up significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I have despaired of being on Facebook now and seeing outrage at something that's in the Borowitz report and constantly having to say...
Or from The Onion,
and saying, you know that the Borowitz report is satire, right? It's not real. He's lying to you. He's a comedian who was hired by the New York Times to write this column. He's a comedian.
It's like getting your news from Jon Stewart, which...
Well, but his news is generally real to start
and
with.
And then he satirizes it.
This is just lying. He admits he's lying. If you read any interview with him, he says, here's what I don't understand. I'm lying. I tell people I'm lying, and they get angry when they think I've been lying.
Why do people take me so seriously?
I love the headline from yesterday. Now, what was it? What was his April Fool's headline? So peace with Iran could limit our ability to bomb it. So that's why we're not going to have peace with Iran, because then we couldn't bomb them.
Right, warns McCain, of course.
Yeah, McCain is warning. Yeah.
But that's the Borowitz report. It's fake. And we see it with The Onion all the time, too. And, you know, it really takes...
What was that quote about Lincoln complaining about don't believe everything on the internet?
Don't believe everything they read on the internet, Abraham Lincoln. The problem is people forget, or they're just too lazy to source things, you know?
Snopes.com.
Do a search. What?
Snopes.com.
Snopes.com. But even if you don't find it at Snopes, because one of the things that Snopes isn't good at is indexing, but... Even if you don't find it at Snopes, do an internet search. And if you only find, if the only source you find is The Onion, or the only source that they found was The Onion, or the Borowitz report, it's probably not true. He was talking about how, I think it's called Hengwei, which is the big Chinese news source. They quote him constantly. So if you look up anything, any headline that he's made, you'll find it there as well. And of course, outrage at whatever he's reporting. And he said, I used to write them back and say, you know, I'm a comedian and I'm lying. It's a comedy column. And they just apparently they just didn't believe him. But our gullibility quotient keeps going up, and I think it's part of our willingness to be complicit in our own outrage. You know, people want to be outraged by things, so they
have to be. Yeah, we have to be mad at something, and always we have to have something that we're mad at.
Yep. Yep, we have to have something we're angry about because that somehow validates us as human beings. So you read something on the internet, and if your choice is to be really angry about it, or to look it up and see if it's true, people will just be really angry about it.
Well, The Onion even calls himself America's finest news source.
Of course, that must be it then. For certain select values of finest
you
and news.
Believe everything you read on the internet. And we've seen this.
Look at the temperature.
Yeah, it's 99 degrees. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Actually, it may be 99 somewhere.
Somewhere.
But yeah, we've seen this over the years with fake handyman. It used to be, yep. You know, they would come to your house and jip you out of stuff. And actually that phrase comes from a derogatory term for right. Some of the fake handymen. And so this has been a problem forever, and it's just getting easier and easier for the bad guys to take advantage of the good nature of people. And you know, when I was a kid, we were brought up to, you know, you trust everyone, you know, and you know, go outside and play. You know, mom kicks you out of the house in the morning, go outside and play. Whoseever house you happen to be at lunchtime, you had lunch with whoever was there. And that's gotten to be more and more, you know, stay inside, you know, organize play dates, you know, don't talk to friends, let alone strangers. And we've gotten to be a paranoid culture that is gullible about everything else. The dichotomy is confusing.
Well, and you're right, because when I was a kid, you know, we still had stone tablets and dinosaurs that we played with. But when I was a kid, we lived essentially in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the neighborhood was like 10 blocks big. You know, our parents would kick us out of the house at breakfast. We were expected to be home when the streetlights came on. Mm-hmm. And in between, lunch was wherever you happened to be. Yeah. If you were near your house, great. If you weren't, great. Nobody worried because they knew you were going to be fed by somebody in the neighborhood.
Every house on the block had a different bell. So you knew when to come home. Okay, that's Jimmy's bell. Oh, there's Bill's bell. And
yep.
If one of my neighbors had a cowbell, so we know, all right, Gary, time to go home.
But that's the way it worked back then, and the world is a very different place now. But I don't, and I guess it's, you know, we still used to believe.
We want to believe.
Stupid things, but.
The X-Files is coming back for 6 episodes. We want to believe.
We want to believe. But yeah, it's just kind of ridiculous, and it's time for us all to just take a step back and relax. You know what I mean? Let go of your anger, let go of the rage. So what? There are legitimate things to be worried about in this world, and there are legitimate things to be outraged about. What happens in the Borowitz report or on The Onion is not among them. That's pretty, that's pretty
the majority simple. Of Earth's potable water is trapped in Coca-Cola products.
Yeah.
See, what? Almost what? Close enough to believe.
What? That's an outrage.
That's an outrage.
Their head.
Dag nab those Coca-Cola people.
Actually, and ironically, I just was listening to a Star Talk episode with Neil Tyson, and they were interviewing biologists and geologists about the water supply. Most of the water on Earth, you know, the Earth is 70% water, most of it's salt water. Was it 3% of the water on Earth is fresh water? 1% of the 3% is accessible, so right. It's not groundwater, it's in the lakes. And 1% of the 1% of the 3% is drinkable.
Right.
And so we have.
And a vast amount of that is in the Finger Lakes.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the fresh water.
And the Great Lakes.
The Great Lakes, yeah. And so water, we think of being a natural resource. It falls from the sky. But most water you can't drink because it's either too salty or contaminated.
Right.
And especially in the underdeveloped worlds, they don't have clean water.
And look at what's happening in California right now. Yep. They have a year's worth of potable water left. That's it. They're done.
Yep.
And the problem
they get their water from Colorado. That's go across 3 states to get to California.
Well, they want to buy it from the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
The problem is they would take the significant amount of it. I mean, a hugely significant percentage of it. It's actually cheaper to transport water from the Great Lakes to California than it is to desalinate the vast amount of water they have off the coast right there in front of them. It's kind of ridiculous. We need people working harder at desalinization and less hard at the next Angry Birds. Although clearly the next Angry Birds is a lot easier.
Crossy Road is the next Angry Birds.
Crossy Road?
It's basically Frogger.
Yeah.
In all its 8-bit glory.
Oh, that would be great. Is that real?
Yeah.
I don't believe you, of course. I'm outraged that I don't believe you. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Okay. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And while you're dialing, I'll read some news. Google's convergence of Chrome and Android is taking a big step forward this week. After launching a limited app runtime for Chrome, or ARC, back in September, Google is expanding its beta project to allow Android apps to run on Windows, OS X, and Linux. It's an early experiment designed primarily for developers, but anyone can now download an APK of an existing Android app. Which is the when you download an Android app, that's what you download, an APK, an application programming executable or kit or something. I don't know. Of an existing Android app and launch it on a Windows or Linux PC, a Mac, or a Chromebook. You simply need to download the Arc Welder app and obtain APKs from Google's Play Store. There are some limitations, which you can read about, but most apps run really well. There are some exceptions, like Gmail, Chrome for Android, that throw up Google Play Services errors, but that's not because Arc doesn't support them. Developers will need to optimize their apps for Arc, and some Google Play Services are also supported right now, making that process a lot easier. Arc is based on Android 4.4, meaning a lot of standalone apps are immediately compatible. Twitter works well, Facebook Messenger loads just fine, but who cares? But does continuously say it's waiting for the network. Flipboard is impressive, with the ability to flick through using two-finger gestures on a trackpad, and even Instagram works well for casual browsing. Of course, trying to use the camera in apps will immediately force the app to crash, and keyboard commands aren't always recognized properly. The biggest issue is that most apps are simply designed for touch, or in the case of games, to use a phone's accelerometer. While simple games like Candy Crush Soda work very well, others refuse to launch properly or couldn't handle mouse input correctly. That's not surprising for apps that haven't been optimized, and it's clear Google's project has a bright future. While Microsoft is building out Windows 10 and the idea of universal apps across PCs, phones, tablets, and the Xbox One, Google is turning Android into its own universal app platform. Google already built a way to push Chrome OS straight into Windows 8, and this latest Android experiment brings Google even closer to a PC market dominated by Microsoft. Developers can now run their Android apps on phones, tablets, PCs, Macs, Chromebooks, and even Linux-powered devices, and that's a big opportunity that will likely result in a lot of these apps arriving in the Chrome Web Store in the near future. So, are you interested in running Android apps on your PC or Mac? Give us a call, 585-5555. 866-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Larry did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good evening, guys. Good to hear you again.
Thanks. We haven't been anywhere. We've just been in a pledge drive.
Oh, well, I'm a member.
I'm glad. And thank you.
I am having a problem opening Google, seeing a Google calendar in Chrome if I open up Google. If I open up Safari, I can see the calendar. But if I go back to Google and then open up Chrome, I cannot see the calendar. I have tried as best I could to look at settings and things like that, but I know there's something going on that I'm just not understanding. So I'm trying to find out what's going on.
Okay, you're in. What's your operating system?
This is a Mac, so I'm using the latest OS version of Mac.
Okay, are you seeing a corrupted screen or a blank screen?
It's just a blank screen. If I go to a website, any website that has a Google Calendar, it just doesn't show up. If I go to that same website in Safari, the screen is the Google Calendar is there.
And it doesn't say, like, sorry, calendar is temporary, unavailable.
No, nothing. It's just invisible.
And if you go to your calendar, if you have one, if you go to your calendar at google.com, it doesn't show up?
My calendar in google.com shows up just fine. So I've been trying to edit a calendar for our Little League team, and if I want to see that calendar now, the only way I can do it is to go to Safari, but I cannot see it in Google Chrome.
What version of Chrome do you have? Is it the latest version, 41? Maybe you're too far behind.
Let's see.
In the Chrome menu, go to About Google Chrome.
Okay. You settings. May also... What? About Google? Wait a minute.
Yep. Yeah, the first command in the Chrome menu.
Oh. Let's see. I think you may have lost me. Let's see. If I go to...
Listen. Open a blank. Open a blank.
Oh, about
tab.
Google Chrome. I'm sorry.
Go. Yep.
Okay, got it. I have version 118. It says 64-bit.
And it says it's up to date.
Right, it has a check mark. Says up to date.
Okay. Here's a couple of things you could try. It could be one of your extensions. Thank you. Could be one of the extensions is causing a problem.
So in that same box you're in now that says About Google Chrome, on the left there's a button that says Extensions.
Okay,
and that
looking
will
at it.
That will show you any extensions you've added to Chrome. You may have something like an ad blocker or a JavaScript blocker that's preventing it from installing.
Okay, there's something that looks like a little lunchbox, and it says try the new Chrome apps, and then there's something that looks like a teardrop in a circle that says currently 2.70. I have no idea what that is.
That's a very cool app. That's when you open up a brand new tab. It shows you the date and the time and the weather.
Oh, okay. Now, the next thing is a lock. It says HTTPS Enforcer 2.2.
That may be it.
Disabling that. Well,
it says it's the checkbox is enabled.
Right, so disable it.
So what that does is requires you to encrypt every website you go to. And it may be that the website you're on does not have encryption. So it's a security precaution if you're going to banking sites and sites like that. And the web is slowly moving into always encryption everywhere, but not every web page supports that yet.
Okay, so up until about a month ago, my calendar was showing, and now it's not.
Right, and so what changed? Did you add an extension somewhere?
I don't believe I did. I've checked and checked, and if I have, I don't know how to recognize it.
Well,
uncheck all of those extensions, or one at a time.
Let's step back a step. The extensions that you're looking at right now, where did they come from?
Somebody installed them.
Somebody installed them. Those are not common, comes with the browser extension. So somebody installed them.
Okay, that guess that would be me.
Yep, unless someone else has access to that machine, that was you.
Well, only my wife, and I know she's not going to do it, so
right.
I guess that has to be me. I wish I could blame her, but never mind.
So you did install those at some point for some reason.
Yeah, so and just a primer. I don't really look at extensions much. What are they and what do they do?
They literally extend the capabilities of the operating system. So
the browser.
For the browser, rather, in this particular case. So, for example, I have one that puts the temperature the one that puts in the temperature?
Yeah, on a new tab.
On a new tab? He just said it. Hold on a second. Let me bring
the one
that
looks like a teardrop.
Yeah.
A water drop, probably.
Yeah, a little water drop, I guess,
Yeah.
Okay, so I would knowingly install these extensions then, right?
Not always. There are, and it's usually ad-based extensions. You go to a web page that has an ad. That ad can install an extension that gives you more ads, typically. But ads can install themselves. And so that's how some of those can get in there.
But generally, things like currently do not do that.
Install them yourself.
Enforcer does not do that.
Okay.
So someone installed them. And basically, what you can do as you go down that list, you can see they all say enabled, or if there's a checks box, if the box is checked, they're enabled. If the box is not checked, they are disabled.
Uh huh.
One thing you can try, just for grins and giggles, uncheck all of them.
Okay.
Then go to the pages that you're having trouble with and see if you can now see the calendar.
Okay, now, so right now, I only see these three things, and then, of course, there's a little Chromebook thing that says get more extensions.
Right. You don't need to worry about that one.
But I'm not, the only thing that I see besides the Enforcer and this thing for temperature is just that. So it says try the new Chrome apps and extensions, which
I presume if I clicked on that would go
to something new.
Right. Do not confuse yourself with any of that yet.
Okay.
My suggestion is that you uncheck the HTTPS Enforcer.
Okay, done.
And now go to one of those websites and see if you see your calendar. If you do not...
Okay. So let me...
No. Let me talk for just a minute, if I may.
Okay.
If you do not, then let me suggest you clear the browser cache.
Okay.
Then check your antivirus and firewall settings
to
ensure that both Google.com and Google.com/calendar are not being blocked.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't sound like they are because you can see them in Safari, but you should check.
So if they were actually blocked, they wouldn't show up in Safari either then?
Theoretically, but you should check.
Okay. So that's number two. All right, so I've written all your suggestions down.
Give them a shot and let us know.
I will. Thank you very much, and glad you're always there.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have fun. Thanks, Larry.
There's a command line prompt to open Chrome without any extensions, but I can't find a GUI way to do it.
Right. There is actually an extension.
An extension to not load extensions?
Called toggle extensions on or off.
That'll do it.
And so if you load that one in, you get a little power button up in your thing here that says that if I click that, all my extensions turn off. If I click it, they all turn back on again. There it is, a toggle button, I think. If it comes with a little, no, there's an E in toggle. So it's called, I don't know, maybe
toggle
it's called something.
Off.
Toggle on off. There's a lot of extensions for Chrome. And similarly, of course, for everything else as well. I mean, does Safari have extensions?
Safari has extensions. Firefox has add-ons. But
add-ons,
it's same thing. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of that stuff that's there, but you need to understand what it does and why it does it. For example, I have one called Zedit, Z-E-D-T, and it lets me play the classic text adventures in my browser. It's my favorite. I waste too much time with it. But there's one called WOT, Web of Trust, and it goes out every time you go to a website and tells you whether or not other people think that site is okay or bad or whatever it might be. There's a weather one. The weather one is the one that puts a weather bug up in my top of the screen, I guess, whatever that's called, top of the window. TweetDeck has one, Tabs to the Front, which brings my tabs to the front. Radio Player Live.
One of the interesting things that we've seen over the years is when Firefox first came out, it was designed as a lean, fast browser to combat the bloat of Internet Explorer. But then people started adding more and more and more extensions. So then it made it slower. So Chrome came out as a lean, fast browser to fight the bloat of Firefox. But now there's more and more and more extensions.
Who's next?
Safari.
But you can take them all out, and that's the important thing. One of my favorite extensions is called Greenhouse. It was written by a 15-year-old kid. And what it does is any place on your web page that you have the name of a congressperson, a senator or a representative, it highlights it. And if you click, if you either point to it or click on it, it brings up everybody who gives them money. I love this extension. Of course, it was written by a 15-year-old kid, so I detest him. I hate him with a passion. But the extension itself I love. The kid did an amazing job. He really did. He did an amazing job. So there are extensions that do almost everything. And as Larry said, you can add more of them pretty easily. Down at the bottom of your extensions page is get more extensions. You can do a lot of searching for that stuff and a lot of there's a lot of different things that you can do. Stuff to make Twitter easier, stuff to make Facebook easier. There's an IRC client for Chrome. There's professional text editing built in, calculators and calendars, and you name it. A little audio player things, just a bunch of stuff that makes life a little easier and a little faster. Now, the more, as Steve pointed out, the more of that stuff you load, the more space in your computer, the more RAM your browser takes up, and the slower it is to load. So you can, if you want to, slow it down enough that it's almost like Internet Explorer. That's your choice. But you don't have to. You can make it as lean and as mean as you want. And, of course, all of them can be enabled and disabled. Now look, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free. 1-800-790-0415, and join in the insanity that we've been going through today. I could talk about extensions all day long, but instead we'll go back to the phones and we'll talk to
Charles from Brighton.
Hi, this is Nick. Who's this?
This is Charles, yes.
Oh, Charles. Hi, yeah. What's up?
Yeah, I have a question about phones or cell phones. So most people in my family, they use a smartphone, an iPhone. I'm still using a Go phone from AT&T. Now, their phones only last about a day, you know, before you have to charge them up. Whereas my Go phone can go 3, sometimes even 4 days without having to charge it. Of course, the reason is because the smartphones have a processor, use up a lot of power, and the screens use up a lot of power.
Yeah,
too.
They do more. Yeah.
Right. So why can't they design those smartphones so that when you don't want to use those extra features, they just use a minimal functionality to just make and receive simple phone calls, and then dial down the power consumption for that purpose. And then when you want to use it for more functionality, you can use the full processor capabilities, and of course the power consumption would go up at that point.
Well, it depends on which phone you have. My Galaxy S5 does that. I have a mode in my phone called Power Save, which essentially turns it into a dumb phone.
Yeah.
I can make calls, I can get calls, everything else is turned off.
Really? Okay.
But most phones just don't have that feature enabled.
HTC M8 has that same feature in it where I can turn it off and it'll go down to basically nothing.
Yeah. And a lot of it is many people who get the smartphone want the texting and the email and the web surfing and all that stuff it does, and that's why they get the smartphone to begin with.
Yeah.
But the industry seems to be obsessed with thin, that they could give a smartphone a week battery, a week long battery, if they made it, a foot thick.
but
no one wants a couple inches. Yeah, no one wants that. They want thin. It is the new metric. How thin is my phone?
Right. We've had smartphones now for what, 6, 7, 8 years, something like that.
Yeah,
the first iPhone. So you would think at this point, since there has to be people like me who want that kind of functionality where you can, which you say already exists in some brands at this point. Why doesn't Apple, for instance, offer something like that? Is there really so little demand that they're not responding to it?
Apparently.
They're making a boatload of money selling what they have.
Yeah.
But, it's sort of that top difference between, people who want to make phone calls and people who want to use it as a portable computer. In fact, a lot of, especially in the tech industry, a lot of people hardly ever make phone calls with their phone. You could remove the telephone feature and it wouldn't matter.
All right, I got to tell you this. My phone's been on since about 7 a.m., so I've only got about 90% of my battery left on my Samsung. And if I turn on ultra power saving mode, the estimated standby time is 11.3 days.
That's great.
Yeah. And that's the deal with that. You turn off every thing that makes it a smartphone, and you get 11 days of dumb phone. But most people, as Steve said, don't want dumb phone. They want smartphone.
And we've gotten used to plugging it in at night, and that's just sort of how it goes. You plug in and recharge every night.
Yeah, I guess that is it. For those of us who don't have the cognitive ability to remember to do that, we would like to have the more extended battery life.
Well, one of the other nice thing about some of these phones, and it depends, again, on the model you have, you buy a specific type of cradle for it, and then you put that by your bedside.
Yeah.
And when you put that in the cradle, it becomes essentially an alarm clock.
Right.
It puts big, large numeral time on the screen. You can set the alarm. You can set it to put you to sleep, and it'll turn off the phone. It'll turn off other notices, et cetera, and recharge it at the same time. So if, in fact, that's your alarm clock, the likelihood that you're going to forget that goes way, way, way down. So they do what they can to make it both convenient to use and easily rechargeable and everything else. But,
and it's also become a third-party opportunity. There are several companies that make extended battery cases for different model phones. So you can put it in a longer battery case so it lasts a day or two without recharging.
Right. Well, I guess I'm going to have to stop.
Hello?
Stop resisting.
Hello?
Oop.
I guess he had to stop.
His battery died.
That may be what happened. Charles?
And that's one of the...
Did he hang up? He's gone.
I think it's his phone.
He's gone.
Okay. Sorry, Charles. I don't know what happened there, but...
His phone and our phone. And what we do see a lot of is, especially with messaging apps, is that you can message someone and not have to talk to them.
And
a lot of times, I just need a quick answer. Do we need anything from the store? I don't want to get caught in a 20-minute conversation with my wife. I just want to. I'm leaving the office now. Do we need anything from the store?
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi. Happy Easter, guys.
Happy Easter to you, too.
You know, I hope, and it's going to make me very sad, I hope you guys don't leave. What am I going to do with a computer question?
I get it, and thank you.
Believe me, I've got a learning disability, and you guys break it down. There's got to be somebody out there who's got more money than me that could have put in the $2,500. Come on. In Rochester, New York, there's nobody out there who's got more money?
Well, if you can find them, great. We haven't found them yet, but...
Come on now. I mean, a company or something? Come on.
You know,
I did my part, and a lot of people did their part, but there's some people out there that, it just drives me crazy.
No, we agree with you, Linda. Thank you. But,
okay.
You know, the people...
I've got a question.
Okay, go ahead.
I've got a Verizon phone, and I, you know, do a lot of things in the Google Play Store, and I think I've got it set up where my Verizon bill pays for my that music app, you know, the $9.99 every month.
Sure.
Okay, but now I've also got Google credits, but every time I try to buy something, it goes on my Verizon bill. How will I be able to use my Google credits? I can't do that because Google Play Music is taking the money to Verizon, but I've got $94 on my Google Play credits that I can't use.
Yeah, I think I remember someone else asked a similar question, and we found that the Google Music Store cannot use the Google credits.
Right.
The Google Play Store can. So you can buy stuff in the Google Play Store against your Google credits.
It doesn't work. It goes on my Verizon bill.
Okay.
Okay, you must have set it up that way.
I don't know.
Because
they wanted a credit card, and I said, well, you know, I didn't really want to put my credit card. It says, do you want to use Verizon billing? And I said, yes.
So you have to say no on that.
Well, then I'd have to use a credit card then.
The Apple store, online stores are similar to that. You have to use a credit card to start the account, but then you can remove the credit card and it will use your gift credit balances instead.
Yeah, I know that's not a problem, but I can't figure out how to do, because I've got $94 in Google Play that I can't use.
So well, what means, you would have to do at this point, I think, what you would probably have to do is turn off the billing for. The billing to Verizon in the Google Play Store,
uh-huh.
In your account, turn off the billing to Verizon, buy whatever you want with your credits, and then turn it back on again when you're done with your credits.
That seems ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the way they've set it up. Nobody wants to give up taking your money because they get a piece of it, right?
Yeah.
So nobody's going to make that easy for you. Nobody.
It's the ridiculous nature of business. It's
exactly. It's not about you. It's about them.
Yeah, I know.
So that's the way that is. I've got a decent amount of money on my Google Play credit as well, and using it is difficult.
Which is silly. Yeah, it shouldn't be difficult to spend your money.
Steve, I found out one thing though that I don't use iTunes. I don't buy. You know, don't use iTunes. To buy anything anymore. You know what I do? I have the Amazon Instant Video on my iPad,
yep.
And I buy all my videos and everything from Amazon now. iTunes has, what's the word I'm looking for besides screwed?
Yeah, okay.
They have schnooked me out of a lot of money. So, I mean, you know, so it's too bad. I mean, you know, get it. And then try to call Amazon, try to call Apple support and all that. They give you a hard time. Well, what'd you do? No. I don't even buy books from them anymore. I buy books from Audible.com.
Right.
Yeah, it's a different model whether you want to have that subscription service. And the way some people look at it is you pay money for not watching video. If I don't watch any video, I still have to pay Amazon that month.
Right.
Yeah, and with iTunes, you buy
Audible,
the video, you keep it.
Audible is $25 a month.
Right.
But I get two credits. I could buy two books that are normally $12 on iTunes. Well, there's my $25 there.
An Audible subscription can be cheaper and most times is cheaper than buying individual audiobooks. But if you only want one or two books a year, then it's cheaper to buy them individually than it is to pay the subscription every month.
Yeah.
So it's outright purchase. And ironically, Apple doesn't do both.
Maybe several months back, I told you I was having trouble listening to my books and all that on iTunes. So I gave that up, and I thought to myself, No. Well, I hope you guys, if I had the money, guys, I'd give you $2,500.
God bless you. We appreciate that, Linda. Have a great week.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's very sweet of her. And yeah, we didn't make the money. Stuff's got to happen, but we'll see what it is. And we'll do our best to see to it that it doesn't have a huge impact on us. And again, you, the Soundbites family, did a great job. A great, great job. Do we have time for Jack?
Yes, we have 5 minutes.
All right, Jack from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
Yeah, is there such a program that is common, calendar-wise, that is common to my phone, my PC, and my Kindle, which is Android, of course?
Yes, there are half a dozen of them, depending on how you want to access it. If you are looking at... If you're an Apple person, then the Apple was a called calendar.
Calendar.
Okay,
used,
the Apple
used to
calendar.
Be iCal, but they.
Oh right.
The trick is going to be Kindle.
My phone is a Samsung.
Okay, so the theory is that Google's calendar will work across all those platforms. There should be an app for the Kindle. There is an app for your Android phone. And of course, you can view it directly through your browser, or through a Chrome app on your desktop or laptop.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of finding it. Now, the real question is that Kindle? That's the little bug in the woodpile.
Which
right
model
there.
Kindle is it?
Don't really know. It's on my fourth one.
Is it the new Fire? Is it fair?
Yeah, Kindle Fire HD. Yeah,
there you go. Google Calendar.
Calendar app. Goo, Business Cal. Yeah, I found a list of a bunch of different calendars that will synchronize Google Calendar to the Kindle.
Right, and here's the deal. The Kindle Fire HD has its own calendar app.
Correct.
And there is a way to... sync that to Google, and we'll put that.
Find the best one of those links. There's a bunch of different ways to do it.
Find the best one of those links, and we'll put that up on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you.
Okay.
But we will. Yeah, it's. There's a half a dozen of them. Let us take a little bit of time to look through them and see which one. Seems to be most useful.
Okay.
And we'll do that. Google does have a forum on how to do exactly that. So we'll take a look at that and post the link for you.
Great.
But it does make it easiest if you use all your devices from the same company. All Google, all Apple, or all Amazon.
Right. Well, but the Kindle Fire is an Amazon device, so... Or is an Android device, so
yeah. Right.
It should theoretically sync right up once you know how to do it. There'll be a little secret to it, but in general, figuring out how to make it happen should work. Business Calendar, they think is the better one. So, at any rate, we'll look at it, we'll figure it out, and we'll put up a link.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you guys being there.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have fun. There's the part of the problem, of course, is the plethora of choices. We are, as the British say, spoiled for choice with stuff like that. All right, that sound tells me that we are done for this particular hour, but do not despair, because although you have wasted an entire hour of your life at this nonsense, we're going to give you the opportunity to not learn from your mistakes and do it all again on the other side of this hour. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're about to hurtle headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. And thanks to you, we are still on the air, although certainly changes will be made at the station. We are sound bites right here on the Truly Great. And thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds with a whole lot more of sound bites on Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, blah, blah, blah. We did that the other hour. For those of you just tuning in, because I know some of you missed the first hour of this show, silly, silly people, we are without Dave Enright this week. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, hoping to outdistance that posse and lose himself in the foothills of the Mogollon somewhere. At any rate, we're here, and the fun drive is over. I know there are many of you out there breathing a sigh of relief. You're the ones who did not help us reach our goal. We did not reach the $50,000 we need, so there will be changes at the station. But for those of you who were kind and generous enough to become members, thank you so much for your support and your generosity. We need it, and it really helps. So thank you. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up? Mike, are you there?
Hang on a minute, Mike. We're transferring.
Hold on a minute, Mike. Don't hang up. Don't hang up.
Say so our next public event is going to be our Jazz Cruises. Tickets have gone on sale.
Those are so cool.
On the Fairport Canal on the Colonial Bell. Cruises will be on May 18th, June 8th, July 13th, and August 17th. And information is available at the jazz901.org website.
All right, back to the phones. And Mike, are you there?
Yeah.
Yay, what's up?
Well, first, have you caught Gillian Anderson on Netflix?
Not yet.
And you know what I'm talking about, The Fall?
No.
Okay, she plays a Belfast detective, hard as nails Belfast detective, and she's really hot looking.
She always has been.
Yeah, very thin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, anyway.
Oh, and with her native accent, too.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize she is British.
Yeah. So, well, I kind of figured that from the British television. That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, they use mostly British actors over there. We bring over British actors here.
Yeah. And what's interesting is we're seeing original first-run basically TV shows on Netflix and Hulu, and Amazon's doing one now. So it's a new outlet for producers and actors to be first-run new shows.
Yep. And you're seeing those on Netflix and on everything else now.
Yep.
Daredevil's coming up very
Daredevil,
soon.
Yeah.
Very exciting. All right, so what's up?
Well, the next one is kind of like a general question. I was wondering if you guys ever, had any experience with automotive software where you hook your computer to the OBD2 port and control. I was just wondering if you had any experience, or whether the listeners had any experience with that.
Right. What do you need?
More horsepower.
I have not done that myself. No,
I have been seeing a lot of the commercials on for newer cars that come with an app that monitor a lot of that stuff now that you used to have to use aftermarket software to plug into the console with. So a lot of cars now will give you that fuel efficiency data, that that's the biggest one, mileage and things like that on your smartphone.
Yeah,
and the car companies are now touting that as a feature.
Yeah, well, they seem to have targeted the phone. I guess it's because of the younger people. I was just wondering if they had anything, you know what I mean, that went to like just a laptop type of thing. Whether you had any experience with it.
I never really looked into it before.
You know. But now as cars get more sophisticated, I'm just looking at it going, I wonder, you know. So I figured I'd give you guys a call.
I do know that there are programs for laptops that do that. My father-in-law took a cross-country trip and had his laptop plugged in to his car the whole trip and collected all kinds of data that I don't know if he ever looked at again. That was my father.
Most of them appear to be being sold in the repair industry. So it's a diagnostic and scanning program. And then the car enthusiasts will use it to tweak horsepower and performance.
Okay. I would just thought you guys, you know, and now you'll get some brilliant listener who will come in and recommend something.
Yep.
Okay. Have a good day. See you guys.
Thanks. Bye. Have fun.
Bye. Well, it looks like Jags has a whole line of plug-in modules and software tuning modules. Jags is one of the biggest automotive parts, aftermarket performance parts companies.
Right. So, yeah, I'm afraid that's all we know about it. One of the many, many things we know so little about.
Yeah. We're computer guys, not car guys, which is weird because how many computers are in a car these days?
Right. Speaking of actors doing specific sets of shows, nice segue. For years, the only way to get HBO in the U.S. was to subscribe to an expensive pay TV package, or more recently, to borrow an HBO Go password from a friend or family member who subscribed. But soon you'll have many more ways to get HBO. Through Apple devices, with Sling TV, Dish's new internet TV service, perhaps even via your internet provider, eventually through your shoes, your fillings. This month, HBO will launch HBO Now, a standalone streaming service that will let you watch the network shows on a range of devices whenever you like. It won't be a live stream of the HBO schedule you'd see on a cable or satellite TV, but rather the network's programming will become available on the new service when it airs live on TV. In other words, HBO Now will be similar to HBO Go, a streaming service that's been out for years, minus the need for a cable or satellite subscription. The network hasn't get. We signed up for HBO in our family. I had not yet hung up the phone when my daughter came to me and said, "What's the password for HBO Go?" That's a true story.
There was a skit on College Humor that was great. They hit all of them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was just like a chain end to end of. Oh my God! What's your password? Oh yeah. My God! What's your password? What's your password? Who does this password actually belong to?
The network hasn't yet given an exact date for the launch, but said it will happen before the premiere of the fifth season of Game of Thrones, and that happens on April 12th. So it's got to be out almost immediately. HBO Now is aimed at the growing number of cord cutters, those who already watch their video through streaming services like Netflix and Hulu Plus. Instead of subscribing to a cable package, though, it could also prompt more people to cut the cord. For the first 3 months, the exclusive non-pay TV provider of HBO Now will be Apple. That means that other companies that make streaming devices like Amazon or Roku won't be able to offer HBO Now at its launch, but pay TV providers like cable and satellite will be able to sell it. HBO Now will cost $15 per month if you access it through Apple. You'll be able to sign up through Apple TV, the $70 box that connects your TV to the internet, or by downloading an app on your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. Sling TV, the newest online TV service from the satellite company Dish, said on Wednesday that it will offer HBO to its subscribers. Customers who already pay $20 a month for the basic Sling package, which includes ESPN, will be able to add HBO to their channel lineup for an additional $15 a month. You don't have to sign a contract, you don't need to install or rent any equipment, and you don't even need a TV to watch it. Cablevision, if you live in one of the areas, the Cablevision services, you'll be able to subscribe to HBO Now through the cable company without having to buy a cable package. You want more? Since HBO has said that HBO Now will launch by mid-April, there's a chance we'll hear more ways to obtain this programming in the near future. So, are you ready for HBO everywhere? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800. 790-0415.
You would think Time Warner would offer it too, being that after all, they kind of do own HBO.
Their plan is not to have you buy a standalone service, but to buy the cable package. They would much rather get $70 or $120 or $250 a month from you than $15. And that $15 goes more to HBO than to the Rochester branch of Time Warner Cable. Yeah. So,
and then one of the things to keep in mind is that as you cut your cable TV cord and subscribe to more services, you know, Netflix, $8 a month, Hulu, $8 a month, HBO Now, $15 a month, CBS, I think, is $15 a month. Be careful about all these per month charges, because eventually you're going to pay more than you did for your cable TV.
Well, you have to go a long way to do that, but yes, yeah. Yes, that's absolutely true. And also make sure that you've got a fast enough network connection for that, because I know that back in the day, when my wife was streaming one thing, my daughter was streaming a second thing, and I was streaming a third thing, and we all wanted high definition, it got a little dicey. Not anymore, of course. I have Greenlight. Thank you. And so, you know, my system doesn't even know it's happening anymore. But the reality is you need to be very careful about how much speed you use in your system. The other day we were all watching something different in HD. I was downloading a torrent, a legal torrent that I had purchased. Thank you.
Torrent, procured legally.
Of stuff. And again, I wasn't... My Greenlight modem, my fiber router, really is what it is. Hardly noticed it. It was just like, yeah, okay, I'm not doing anything. the reality is that with other services, you may find there's a problem. Of course, AT&T ran into the problem of having throttled.
Yeah, my Frontier router, which is I got in 2007, so it's pretty old now. Whenever I'm, you can only stream on one computer or connected device at a time. If you try a second one, the whole thing crashes.
We did do a little test. I have to admit, when we first got Greenlight, we fired up about a half a dozen different devices and streamed movies to them. It was fine. We didn't go much beyond half a dozen devices. We didn't really have much beyond half a dozen devices. But we streamed through all of them, and it went very, very nicely. Thank you. I have, the wireless in my house is 47 megabits, but that's not
we
even
really
half
hate
of,
you.
That's well,
yeah. You're really not doing much.
You can buy that router yourself, but
you know,
yeah. But
yeah, you're not helping us.
That's not even half of the thing. And I'm just too cheap to pay for gigabit. Yeah, I have 100 megabit. I'm very happy with that. Although they just lowered the price of gigabit. So that was...
Well, yeah. Who was it? Somebody... Crap. Was it Verizon? No, I don't think it was Verizon. Someone just announced 2 gigabit fiber coming to certain cities.
Right. Now Rochester.
It's faster than Google's 1 gigabit.
Right.
That old, slow 1 gigabit fiber. Oh, we don't want that.
And I said from the very beginning, I'm so delighted that companies like Google and Greenlight and all are getting into this business, because it means that the you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. That really doesn't work in trickle-down economics, but it really does work in stuff like this. We find that people are doing that. Google also has a thing where they're talking about bringing ubiquitous Wi-Fi to an area. So they'll blanket an entire city with Wi-Fi. Municipal Wi-Fi like thing, and if they do that, well, again, you end up with other companies having to lower their rates to make their stuff more worthwhile. So, I'm kind of excited about all of this. It means that we'll be seeing hopefully better prices and faster service. We are, you know, from the world leader and stuff like that, we've become a third world country in terms of the speed of our internet access. And, of course, the government has now redefined broadband to be faster than it was. Six megabits, did they say?
No, I thought it was like 25.
Oh, yeah, no, it was. You're right. It was six.
It was, yeah.
and now it's up to 25, so that a lot of these places simply cannot say they're broadband providers anymore.
I haven't heard what the new word is, though. Just high speed, I guess. But it's not high speed anymore.
Right. It's sort of blah high, speed now.
Higher speed.
Right. Like ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed. No. Never say this part again.
Tell you speed.
Yeah.
Right. And we see it a lot, you know, and for many people, that low-end thing is perfectly acceptable. You know, if you're living alone or it's just you and your spouse and you don't do a lot of live streaming and you don't do a lot of, you know, you're doing a lot of looking stuff up on the web and visiting family on Facebook, and once in a while you do a Skype and that's about it. Those lower end packages are perfectly fine.
Yeah, both Frontier and Time Warner have a $15 a month package. It's, you know, 2 or 3 megabit, which is ridiculous for us techie types, but perfectly fine if it's just you know, surfing the web and you're not trying to stream 16 different high def videos at the same time.
Right, and so that's all fine. And you know what else is fine? We're fine, and we're going to take a quick break so that when we come back, we'll be even finer. With Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on the truly great and gratefully member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Michael Oden.
And Steve Ray is, believe it or not, Steve Ray is actually taking a pledge. We are so honored and so delighted. We would like to thank Nancy for her very generous donation. Thank you, Nancy. That's wonderful. Thank you. For those of you who are who have just tuned in, we did end the pledge drive Friday afternoon, but we did not make our goal. So there are going to have to be changes. And of course, this is a publicly funded station, member supported only. So we'll take pledges anytime we're on the air. We'll take a pledge, or you can always do it online at jazz901.org. So we'd like to thank Nancy for her very generous donation. We know that you folks have a lot of demands on your wallet, and this is just one more, and I get that. And we thank those of you who have been kind enough and generous enough to help us stay on the air.
We also had a call from Charles earlier. Charles called us back and told me that he is doubling his pledge.
God bless Charles. That's excellent. That's the sort of thing we love to hear. If we're actually helping you... What?
Hit the bell.
Hit the bell. if we're actually... If we're helping you, then we're delighted and honored that you are... is this... That works. Excellent.
That's the bigger bell.
That's the big bell.
Let's get ready.
All right.
Somewhere there's a boxing ring without
a
bell.
I actually pushed that button. It scared the heck out of me. But thank you. Thank you, Nancy, so much for your pledge. And to all those of you pledged over the last couple of 3 weeks, we really want to thank all of you. But you can, the rest of you who have not pledged can feel relief that we're not going to be guilting you anymore. You can forget about that, and you can listen without having paid so much as a penny, thanks to the generous donations of the people who went before you. And you can give us a call with your computer questions, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
So I mentioned for our previous caller asking about car software, I did find a system called Automatic at automatic.com that it's $100 for the hardware device that plugs into your port on your car, and it transmits to your smartphone. So this does go to the phone, not the computer. But it tracks all sorts of stuff, your mileage, driving trips, your acceleration rates, and how to save fuel by accelerating slower and braking slower. And
I'm sorry, you can accelerate slower?
Don't stomp the gas pedal, and it doesn't use as much gas.
What?
But people behind you were mad.
That does not compute to me. I do have a lead foot. I have always admitted that. It's terrible, but it's true.
I'm just trying to picture that, knowing what you drive, that thing.
That's a zippy little car.
0 to 60 in a week and a half?
What?
0 to 60 in a week and a half.
Uh-huh. If it's a tailwind and downhill.
Yeah.
I drive a Nissan Cube, and it is a peppy little car. It's fun to drive. In fact, both my wife and my daughter like to drive it, so I will often go out to go somewhere and not have a car. I'm trying to at least let them understand that they need to at least tell me when I don't have a car. That's all I really have ever asked. But back to the news while we're waiting for you to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Apple has expanded its trade-in program to include Android phones, BlackBerries, and Windows Phone handsets, the company's confirmed on Monday. Users will be able to trade in their phones from other platforms and Apple stores in the U.S., U.K., Canada, France, Germany, and Italy via its iPhone reuse and recycling program and receive a gift card to use at Apple stores. The move is likely part of a larger effort to increase conversion rates from non-Apple smartphones. And this is, we'll talk about that when I'm done with the news item. From non-Apple smartphones to the iPhone and increase hardware sales. Previously, Apple updated its website to include a step-by-step guide on how to ditch an Android device for an iPhone. And most recently, CEO Tim Cook said during an earnings call, the company saw more Android users switch to iOS after the launches of the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus than after the launches of the past three Apple devices. That is to say, 7. The iPhone trade-in program launched in 2013 to encourage Apple fans to swap their old iPhones for store credit toward a newer one. Apple, which gives credit for the current value of the older device, requires users to purchase a new model on the same day as the trade. Apple does not appear to be offering the trade-in program online yet, but it is being offered in the Apple Store. So, are you ready to trade in for an iPhone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We've been saying this for the longest time. It's going to be the same with the Apple Watch. They'll sell 10 million the first day because every Apple fanatic will immediately buy it. The question is selling the next 10 million. So day one always looks great, but what's day two going to look like? Now, they didn't have as good a deal with the iPhone 4 as they had with the iPhone 5, a conversion from other platforms. They didn't have, it was better from the iPhone 5 to the iPhone 6 again. But really, Apple has to look at how do they extend their base beyond what is essentially a static user base. They cannibalize their own products. Every time they bring out a new phone, the people who mostly buy it are the people who already own another iPhone.
Yeah. What has to make Google and like Android feel really good is that Apple has to give people incentives to switch off of those platforms.
Yep.
To which,
go ahead.
Android and Google don't really have to do that coming back.
Right. Part of it is features that Apple doesn't offer, like changeable batteries, like that ultra low power mode, 100 different things. But The people who appreciate that look around. The people who don't know or care about that kind of stuff, really, that's not going to have anything to do with them. But the fact is that by expanding this program, they're hoping that people will perk up and say, what, I could get an iPhone 6 by trading in my whatever I have? I probably would trade a BlackBerry in on it.
It does seem to be a limited number of models of each type of phone. So for BlackBerry, they only have three potential models. And they're all fairly new. The Z10, Q10, and Z30 are all...
Well, they're not going to take a 10-year-old BlackBerry that's been sitting in your...
They will take it in for recycling, but they won't give you any money for it.
Right. But this is interesting. I'm sure there was a lot of debate inside Apple. Is this going to help us, or are people going to take this as a sign that we're desperate to get people to buy iPhones? Certainly, it'll be a little bit of both. But I think that...
When you're offering incentives to get people to come over, that kind of smells a little desperate.
Well, but everybody does it. You know, the people who hate Apple will say, this is just one more proof that Apple stinks and people aren't buying it, and the only people who buy it are the Apple fanatics, and it's a terrible product, and nobody should buy it. And then the people who are Apple fans say, this is a great way to get new people into the fold. And I think in a sense, both of those are true. Certainly there's an element of we need more people buying iPhones. Because Apple really, you know, that's where they make their money these days. Apple has become a phone company. That's why they don't call themselves Apple Computer anymore.
There was such an uproar in the community when they took computer off their name. Yep. Does that mean they're going to stop making Macs eventually?
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
It's only been 30 years, you know.
but they're a phone company. They're an entertainment company, you know. They're a music publisher.
Yeah,
that's where they make their money. They're not making money on computers anymore, and they haven't been for a very long time.
Apple just celebrated their 39th birthday on April 1st.
Yep. And one of the issues that they have is how do they expand their base? And the fact is, unless you're buying an Apple product, you're pretty much not. You know, the reception of iTunes into the Windows world has been fairly lukewarm comparatively. You know, whereas if you buy an Apple product, iTunes comes with it. So there's a cross sell into their music publishing business and video publishing business. So there's a whole lot of issues that people have to deal with, a whole lot of concepts that people have to deal with before they can get their heads around what Apple is really trying to do. But, every company wants to expand their reach. That's the whole point of being a growing company. You expand your reach. If you remain static and you're a publicly traded company, at some point the people who have your stock are going to get very, very angry because the people who own the stock are not fans of Apple. They are fans of their dividends. And so unless there is a way for them to increase their dividends, they'll sell Apple out in a minute because they don't care.
They're fans of money.
They're fans of money, not of Apple. That's exactly right. And that's true of pretty much anybody who owns stock in anything, right? But you have to keep your stockholders happy. Would Apple have really put out a watch if their investors had not clamored for one? And we've seen stories over the last year and a half, 2.5 years, of them clamoring for Apple to get into the watch business.
And they have announced pre-order for the Apple Watch begins April 10th at 12:01 a.m. Pacific time.
Right.
So us on the East Coast, you'll have to get up at 3 a.m. Because it will be sold out within less than 5 minutes, I'm going to guess.
Right, right, and they will. Meanwhile, I'm waiting for the Moto 360 2. The second version of the Moto 360.
Yeah, most of the other companies are already on their second or third generation of smartwatch, which the first generation is usually the learning curve. What do people like? What don't they like? And then we'll fix it in the second generation. So a lot of people are being a little cautious about the Apple Watch. Yeah, you can update the software, but the hardware, maybe you know, more conservative people will wait for generation two.
Yep. Well, and that's an interesting thing. I have a friend of mine has a Moto 360, and he's young and constantly on his watch, right? He gets tweets on it. He gets Facebook on it. He gets all this stuff on it. And the battery lasts 2 days. You know, and he said, I'm not doing anything special. The battery just lasts 2 days. Now, he said, I charge it every night, but when I charge it, I'm at 50%. Well, he's at 70 or 75%. But he said, so the battery would last him a couple of days. And, you know, we still have yet to see, obviously, the Apple Watch says, Apple says it'll last 18 hours. And so, generally speaking, that's going to be an overreach.
Especially the first couple of days, maybe even weeks, as all the reviewers run every single function 24 hours a day and say the battery lasts an hour.
Well, this happened with this kid I'm telling you about, and he was very angry. He said, my watch barely lasted a day. I said, well, what did you do with it all day? He said, well, I tried all the this and that, and I played with it, and I showed everybody, and I said, well, yeah. How about if you just use it for a day and see where that goes? Just use it.
Yep.
And of course, then we have whatever the features are, like near field communication, or obviously they all have Bluetooth and et cetera, et cetera. So some pretty interesting things in terms of that. I'm interested in seeing generally for all of these how well they go. Will people start selling their Moto 360s to buy Apple Watches? Will people, you know, a friend of mine's got a Pebble. He says the battery lasts some weeks, so I don't know what the deal with that is. But, you know, so
Apple put together a program where they accept Moto 360s as trade for an Apple Watch eventually?
Right.
Will they do that like they do with the phones?
Right. I suspect they won't at first, but I suspect at some point. If they don't sell well enough, if you're an Apple hater, or if they just want more people in the fold, if you're an Apple fanatic, they will eventually do that, yes. There's a lot to it, but I'll be interested in seeing the Apple Watch, but I don't know that I would want to buy one. Well, of course, I'm not an Apple guy, so it wouldn't necessarily work with my... well, that'll be interesting. Is there app for...
It has to be an iPhone 5 or later.
Yeah, okay.
And the Apple Pay features for the near field need an iPhone 6 or later. So people who have older iPhones may end up needing to buy a new iPhone and an Apple Watch.
Well, and that's and so really what the Apple Watch is doing is feeding into the buy a new iPhone crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. But yeah, I'm very I'm actually very interested in the Moto 360. So I have to figure out how to do that. We're going to take another short break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, who is generously sitting here doing yeoman service in place of Dave Enright. And I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Here was a story that I thought was an April Fool's story, but apparently it is not. Microsoft's software empire, of course, rests on Windows, the computer operating system that runs so many of the world's desktop PCs, laptops, servers, and Microsoft Wish's phones. Along with the Office franchise, it generates the majority of the company's revenues. But one day, the company could open source the code that underpins the OS, giving it away for free. So says Mark Rusinovich, one of the company's top engineers. It's definitely possible, Rusinovich said. It's a new Microsoft. Rusinovich was sitting in front of several hundred people who spend their days running thousands of computers. He helped build Windows, and he carries one of the most respected titles in the world's largest software company, Microsoft Technical Fellow. But on stage at a conference in Silicon Valley, he perched in front of an audience whose relationship with Microsoft is, at best, complicated. The conference was called ChefConf. Chef is a tool that helps tech geeks set up and operate the many machines needed to drive a website, smartphone app, or some other piece of business software. It's an open source tool, which means it's typically used alongside open source software. When Rusinovich asks how many members of the audience use nothing but Windows to run their machines, one guy raised his hand. One guy out of hundreds. Mostly they run the open source Linux operating system. But this is what Rusinovich expected. That's the reality we live in today, he said. The tech world has changed in enormous ways. So many companies, so many Microsoft customers are now relying on open source code. That means Microsoft must embrace it too. As Rusinovich pointed out, the company now allows Linux on its Azure Cloud Computing Service, a way of renting computers over the internet. And today, Linux is running it on at least 20% of those computers. It's quite a change for Microsoft, but as Rusinovich explained, it's a necessary change. And given how popular Linux has become, Microsoft could go even further, not only allowing open source software on its cloud services, but actually turning Windows into an open source software itself. Every conversation you can imagine about what we should do with our software, open versus not open versus services, has happened, he says. Certainly Microsoft won't open source the thing tomorrow, if ever. Windows is such a big part of the Microsoft revenue stream. And as Rusinovich said, open sourcing such a complex piece of code isn't easy. If you open source something but it comes with a build system that takes rocket scientists and 3 months to set up, what's the point? But Microsoft is already giving away one version of Windows for free, though not sharing the underlying code. And it has already open sourced other important pieces of its software empire. If nothing else, his very public comments show in stark fashion how much the tech world has evolved and how much Microsoft has evolved. So, would you like to see Windows open sourced? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, my first thought was, yeah, it's a possibility with a probability of zero.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that as Windows has matured and as he found a lot of people, especially in the server arena, are already using open source Linux, they have to give it away free to compete. And we've seen that in a lot of software in the Linux world, that companies like Red Hat, the underlying software is free, but the support and technical aspects are what you're actually paying for.
Right.
And for a lot of people, the cost of a Microsoft server license is just ridiculous.
Well, and particularly because on top of the license to buy the server, you also have a per-seat license.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to connect 120 people to that server, I have to have 120 licenses to connect people to that server, and Microsoft's own code inside their server checks.
Yep. And what's interesting, too, is Mark Rusinovich also has a book series, Jeff Aiken series,
right,
on cyber criminals, and Jeff and his wife tracks them down. And really interesting books, partly because Mark knows his stuff.
Yeah,
and the news reports that are scattered throughout the books are so close to being true that I have to look them up. Did this really happen at this conference? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of book, when they're so close that it could easily happen. But yeah, the deal with open source code is that it is so easy to use and so cheap. You know, if I want to put up a server, back when I worked, if I wanted to put up a server, I had to put in a requisition for the server itself, and then a separate requisition for the software to run on it. Now, of course, all our servers are virtualized, so as long as I have enough spare processors and enough spare RAM, I can run any server I want, except I still have to now requisition a version of Microsoft Server and enough licenses to cover the number of connections, and that's where it gets expensive. Whereas if I want to put up a Linux system, I just spool up a server, throw Linux on it, I'm done.
There is no step three.
There is no step three. Exactly. Yeah. Profit.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it real easy. That's why so very many people have been learning it and using it. Certainly, if you're going to put up an exchange server, you know, or you have to put up an IIS server or a Microsoft SQL server, then, yeah, you got to have a Microsoft operating system there. But there are open source alternatives to all of those things, most of which work as well or better than the Microsoft product, and they get updated more often, and they're easier to update. One of the things that's always been so unwieldy is Microsoft's updating methodology. Whereas, you know, particularly in a server, if I update a printer driver, I got to restart the system. Well, that's ridiculous. Whereas in Linux, unless I update the core, the kernel, I don't have to reboot ever.
And I just read something about that they're trying to make kernel updates non-rebootable too.
Right, right. The theory is you won't have to reboot anything. Right now, again, on my Chromebook, for example, it updates every couple of weeks and I have to restart it. Well, so what? This is a laptop. I'm going to be shutting it down every day anyway. But a server, once you set it up, you really want that service to be available 24/7. So the fact that I have to reboot my Windows desktop or my Mac laptop or my Chromebook, who cares? But for servers, it's a very, very different environment, and you don't ever want to take them down, ever. Sure, if it's a test server or your own personal little box so that you can publish pictures of your dog, that's great, you know, whatever works. But for a real enterprise, for a real working system, one of the hallmarks is that you rarely have to reboot a server.
And especially for global markets where you can't schedule a time when no one's using it because someone is always in the middle of their workday.
Right. And with the different sections of what you do. So, for example, when I was at RIT, when were we going to reboot our servers? During the day, faculty and staff and students are using them to get classwork done. Even if every student logged off at 2 a.m., we have prospective students from overseas on our servers are as busy at night as they are during the day, and we're certainly not going to shut off prospective students. We don't want to just because we had an update to a video driver.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. So that's the sort of thing that that Microsoft faces.
Brockport, I know, updates theirs on like random like Saturdays at like 4 a.m. and they'll like put a notice on like everything. The website will be temporarily unavailable at 4 a.m. from 4 to 5 or from 4 to 6 or something.
Right.
And they hope nothing goes wrong and it does come back up.
Well, and then there's that, of course. Every time you reboot a server, real system administrators flinch.
Just it's been running straight for 3 years.
Yeah. Yep.
But
yep.
I got to reboot it tonight. No.
Yep. We had one server that needed to run a specific package. It was a Linux server, but it needed to run a specific package. It needed a specific kernel, so we didn't update the kernel for like 2 years. And it was internal to our website only, and only certain addresses could reach it, and blah, blah, blah. So it wasn't a real security issue. But
Somebody complained, right?
What?
Somebody complained?
No, well, the person who complained was my system administrator for that particular machine, because there's an uptime thing.
Oh, God.
It rolled over.
A 32-bit uptime value rolled over. All right.
So it suddenly was at zero again. He was angry about it. It had been up for years.
So rewrite the kernel and make it a 64-bit value.
That's what I told him. He says, too late now.
Yeah.
Nothing I can do about it now. But we'll see where Microsoft goes with this stuff in the future. But everybody's goal is a zero reboot. Even if it happens on your laptop or desktop, again, that's not generally a big deal. But on a server, it's a very, very big deal.
And right now, every Unix machine clock is going to zero out on January 19th, 2038, because that's the full value.
Right. If you were born at midnight on January 1st, 1970, Unix is keeping track of your age.
Yep.
We're done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray and particularly Michael Oden, who came in to do a great job on the phones. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you all for being with us. We specifically want to thank Nancy. Bless you for your pledge. And for all those of you over the weeks who have pledged, we're honored and delighted. Now, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week, and I hope Michael is successful keeping him in line as he was for us. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, probably Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 56 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.